Go.
Blog Talk Radio.
Folks, this is Dave Schmidt. It's the evening of November 7th as we're here in this program tonight. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And yes, it is 6 p.m. on the West Coast and it's 9 p.m. on the East Coast here in the United States. And it's a little different for me because now in Arizona, it's 7 p.m. Yes, this was last Sunday was the Sunday that we all set our clocks back in Arizona. We don't do that. So we don't shift our clocks. In essence, we shift time zones. And so when, you know, during the summertime, when on daylight savings times, I always start at 6 o'clock when we go into the wintertime. And I'm now at 7 o'clock here in Arizona because we're now mountain time. And in the summertime, we're Pacific time. But that's the way it is. And those of us here in Arizona, you know, the most of us, we really like that we don't have to move our clocks. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to think about it. The only time it comes into an issue is if you're like me and you're communicating with other people around the country in different time zones. So, but other than that, welcome to the program tonight. It's nice to be back. Last week, well, I was busy last week. We didn't have a program, but I do want to say thank you to everybody that attended the workshop in Orlando. And then it was a couple of days after that, a couple of good friends of mine, Al and Wanda Warner, we went to visit Michael Lee Hill. Now, you've heard me talk about Michael Lee in the workshops. You all see how I talk about him. This is a really phenomenal guy. He used to live in Ohio. He has just recently moved to Florida. I hadn't seen him for, you know, a couple of years. So it was absolutely wonderful time. I was with him last Wednesday, so that's why we weren't able to have a program. It was great to get caught up to date with him. And shortly, or I should say next year, we're looking at sometime in March, I'm going to have a workshop here in Sedona, and Michael Lee's going to come back as my guest. And that means also the week before, I'll have him here as a guest on the radio program. We were talking about doing that in March. So that's one of the future dates that we're looking at. And for those of you, again, that would like to just become acquainted with him, the phenomenal story that he has. You know, what's so interesting about him. Before I get into that, let's do this. I'm getting ahead of myself. Blanca, how are you doing this absolutely wonderful evening?
I'm doing great, Dave. Thanks. Enjoying the fall weather and the beautiful fall leaves. You know, when you came to Atlanta, you saw the beautiful foliage. Well, all our leaves here are turning beautiful yellows and golds, and so it's a beautiful sight.
Okay, I am being told there's no sound. Now, I think that was on Facebook. I think I just got it, okay? Now, there's about a 5 to 7 second delay. So those of you that are on Facebook, just put a little note in there if I'm coming through. It's, you know, I have to do this just a little bit different when I got the Facebook stuff. Because when I'm doing live both on Blog Talk Radio and on Facebook, I can have my microphone setting all set up in various ways. Yes, okay. Yeah, there was a one little click there that I forgot to set. So now, good. So everybody on Facebook, we're glad you're here, and welcome to the program tonight. It's the November 7th program, and I was sharing about the fact that last week I didn't have a program because I was visiting Michael Lee Hill at his home in Florida. And next year, in March, I'm going to have Michael back on the radio program, and then we'll follow up, and he'll be at a workshop that we'll have here in Sedona, so it would just be nice to have him back. He's one of those really phenomenal guys, and I was just getting ready to say, he's one of those classic examples where for most of his life, he was just an everyday dude, you know? I mean, he was basically a rock guitar player who loved, you know, to smoke his pot and drink his beer. And but yet was always a very nice and kind man. And then he discovers, you know, this phenomenon that he has with his blood and finds out he's been told by multiple sources that because of his blood that he's in what's called a Nephilim. He's an Anunnaki human hybrid. And how much that has changed his life. And he was sharing with me, he says, you know, Dave, because when we step into these physical bodies, we don't have this overnight awareness. We still have to undo what is called the conscious programming of our physical bodies that we're in. And when we do that, we begin to stepping into what he says basically is the authority of who we are. Me just being who I am and what I do and where I've come from. It's a growth process in his life, and he's gone through a lot of growth in the last 2 years. It's just really interesting to see all that going on with him. But so, that's just some of the preliminary comments there. Blanca, what else would you like to share with us tonight?
Well, now that I'm back on Facebook too, hopefully, I just want to say hello to everyone and just let them know that I had shared. We're enjoying the beautiful fall colors here in Atlanta. One thing you mentioned about Michael E. Hill was talking about undoing the unconscious programming of the body. And it's real interesting. You and I have talked about it. You've shared these sort of ideas with the audience. But lately, Alan and I have really, really experienced how the body really does have programs. And so as people continue to work with these ideas, you will have visceral experiences of this. And then once you have that realization, you can just shut the program just like you do in an app on your computer. Really interesting stuff. But anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting, because, you know, while we're talking about that, because see, one of the really strong teachings of A Course in Miracles is the physical body is part of what is called the ego consciousness. In a world that's a holographic illusion, the body, the physical body, is a part of the illusion. But yet we're programmed to believe that it's real. We let it dominate our lives. We let it control what we do and what we can't do. And what the Course really clearly teaches is the body doesn't have a mind. It only responds to the mind of who you really truly are. All it does is respond to the unconscious programming you give to it, to the beliefs that you have. So we have the ability to move beyond that. And that kind of sets in, you know, with what I talked about a month ago, those five stages of the development of our evolutionary process as a human race. Where stage three is moving into understanding that we are what are called holonomic quantum-based beings. And with that, we learn how to move beyond the limitations that the physical body places on us simply because of how we've been programmed and what we believe. The best example, again, of that was the life of Jesus and at the resurrection, at the crucifixion. He had come to that point with truly understanding that his body was not real. It was only a part of the holographic illusion. It was just a dream. And because of that, he then had total control over his body. And when what we would call, you know, the world of form wanted to kill him, basically there on the cross, he was able to rise above it, is what he was able to do. And it's because of how the power of our thoughts and how we think in that whole process. But that's another whole story. We're kind of getting into some side comments here before we get into the regular program, but that's okay. I don't mind doing that. So those are good little thoughts is what they are to share, because those are powerful thoughts. Because, you know, that is such a foundational part of our lives. When we start to understand, you know, the world is a holographic illusion and the physical bodies are a part of that illusion. And I had someone ask us, well, at the workshop, says, well, what is holographic or what is holonomic? Holonomic, holographic, comes from the Greek word wholeness and holy, you know, and that Greek word that means holy means wholeness, like completeness, whole, W-H-O-L-E. It means everything is completely whole. The uniqueness about something that's a hologram is if you take a holographic image and if you cut it in half, you don't have two halves. You still have the whole in both parts. Wholeness keeps it complete. And you can take a holographic picture, a holographic image, and you can cut it up into 100,000 pieces. And every one of those pieces is still going to be exactly the same as all the others. See, something that is holographic, holonomic, it can't be separated. It's whole. It's completely whole within itself. And it's what is called our duality or separation consciousness is what works in contrast to that. And that contrast is what creates all the problems that we have within our world. When we learn how to think in a holonomic manner, when we learn to realize we are holonomic beings, our whole world begins to change. And those are the things you're going to hear me talking about more in the future as well, because what I'm starting to understand that my job here just as Michael Lee was understanding what he calls his divine purpose and mission is, I'm understanding that part of my purpose and mission is to start teaching those things. And the money is a part of it. And I talk about in those five stages of the overall, basically what's called, you know, the human development. So, yes. So that's that stuff
right. For
the introductory stuff. Those are little tidbit side notes of the program. They don't have much to do about the program tonight, but the base foundational issues. So.
Right. Well, it was just something that you brought up, and it struck a chord because this week, Al and I have really been experiencing and sensing that, especially too around the money, to say the money is actually evidence that we as a group have busted that limiting paradigm. So we're getting in the hologram, we're getting some proof of some of these things we've been working on and some of these things that you've been talking about.
Yes, that's true. See, when you come back to the teachings out of A Course in Miracles, when you come back to the teachings out of A.R. Borden, when you come back to the teachings out of the Wingmakers, and when you come back to the interviews of Dr. Neruda, they all are basically kind of outlining where we're going for the next 40 to 60 years. And the biggest thing, the change that our world is moving into, is this understanding of who we truly are as a human race, as Homo sapiens, as a humanity. And it's our consciousness, our thought process, that puts us into what we call restrictions or limitations. And when we learn how to reprogram our thinking, we really reprogram our world, is what we do. So, yeah. Okay, anything else?
Okay, I think that's good.
Okay, well, actually, I want to touch on just basically a few announcements here. Obviously, what's coming up is a week from Saturday, I'll be at the workshop in Seattle. And again, Robert Dunlap, who we're talking about what is called the Meta One cryptocurrency coin, Robert will be there. He and I will talk about that. I did touch on the program a little bit in the video last week and 2 weeks ago. Is, you know, the Meta One coin is what I've been looking for. I have been talking about in the workshops now for over 4 years and periodically here on the programs that we have to move into a new financial system. And we have to bring forth a new financial system because our current financial system is basically run and controlled by the central banking system, which is a very corrupt system, and it's all designed around keeping us into forms of financial slavery. And there's a point in time, and it's the cryptocurrency industry development and process that's going to allow us to break free from that. And why is that? Well, right now in the existing financial system, a bank is always the middleman in every single financial transaction that you and I make. If I was selling a product, or let's just say you come to one of my workshops and you pay, the registration fee. If you write me a check, the check goes from you to the bank to me. If you pay me with a debit or credit card, it goes from your card to the bank to me. If you pay in cash, you got the cash from a bank. And so they control that. So they are the middle person in every single financial transaction. So they control the finances of the world. Now, what's nice about the cryptocurrency system is the middleman, the bank, is eliminated. Now, in the future, you will be able to pay for my workshops using some of the cryptocurrency coins as they become more common and more prevalent. If I wanted to give you $500, I could send you $500 in Bitcoin and there's no bank involved in the middle in between. So you see what it does, it allows us to move our money from the central banking system to where it's a peer-based financial transaction. Now, the cryptocurrency industry, though, right now, it's basically it's kind of like the old Wild West stages. It's still kind of crazy. It's not really settled. And yes, it's being controlled and dominated by a very small group of people. And what's nice about MetaWin, there's three parts that are involved in cryptocurrency. You have the coin itself, and then you have the wallet. It's kind of like a bank account or where you can purchase the coin and how you can get it and where you store it. And then you have that wallet's relationship with the banking industry, because if you want to move money, you want to spend money, you may have to transfer it into your bank account to pay it out of your bank account. All three of those systems are still controlled, even in the cryptocurrency industry, they're controlled by the top elite, very powerful. Not I don't want to say the cabal controllers, but Bitcoin is basically dominated by about 8 to 10 people. They dominate when it can go up and when it can go down. They manipulate it, its price movements back and forth is what they do. What's nice about MetaOne Coin is it's all based on the blockchain system, which means all of the transactions are out into the open. And by doing that, then the coin, because it's asset-backed, you will always be able to watch where money is coming and going and how it's moving. And you will be able to see that there is no one large, small group of people that are controlling it. The second thing is nice is about the wallet or the exchange. MetaOne will have its own exchange. Because right now, if you want to buy Bitcoin, the biggest exchange out there is called Coinbase. And yet Coinbase is still controlled. I can't tell you how many reports I heard from people saying it took them 3 and 4 weeks to open up a Coinbase account. Or they wanted to sell some of their Bitcoin, and for 4 days they couldn't sell it. It's because the dominant powerful people are controlling the transactions there. When MetaOne has its own exchange, that won't take place. And then MetaOne is also setting up its own bank. It was able to acquire an 1808 charter of an 1808 bank. It was able to purchase that charter. That having that charter, it now allows that MetaOne bank to be free from the Federal Reserve controls and manipulation systems. So all three of the parts are absolutely what I call above the market, filled with high integrity. And here's what's interesting about MetaOne Coin. It was designed to be for everyday people like you and me. I'm on the board, and we collectively had made a decision that we are not allowing any hedge funds, any extremely wealthy, powerful, controlling people to come in and purchase the coin. We are not going to allow this coin to be dominated by a small group of people. Let me tell you what happened about 2 weeks ago. Now, Robert, you know, is basically he's the kind of the CFO, Chief Financial Officer, Chief Executive Officer of the MetaOne Coin. He had an offer of $8 billion to purchase coins, and he turned it down. Why? Because he wants it there for you and me. He wants this to be something that's available for the everyday common folks, and this will be the coin that will be in that position. Remember what I said, it's asset backed. They already have over $1.5 billion in fine art that's backing it up, and right now, because of the situation that is there, there are now art museums all around the world that are coming to him and say, please take our art, please take our art. He has said he has close to $2 trillion in art waiting to come online. They can't bring it all in at once, but they're waiting. They want to come into the MetaOne coin system. So you can see how solid it is. And you know it's one of those things that you're not going to lose money in it, because the value of the coin will never drop below the combined asset value that is there. You can see where there's the wealthy people and even Wall Street are banging on the door and wanting to get in. And because we see that it is so solid like that, it's easy to say no. I mean, how many times do you walk away from an $8 billion offer? Hello? You know? Walked away from $8 billion. They said no to it. Because the real people with the real money that know the industry, they understand how solid MetaOne Coin is. Now, so at the Seattle workshop, Robert will be there on November 17th. November 24th, I'm doing one in Salt Lake City. He will not be at that one. And then December 1st, I'm doing one in Dallas-Fort Worth, and he will be at that one. I will have him back on the radio program probably about a week or two before the Dallas program. Most likely the Wednesday before the Dallas program is when I'm going to have him back on the air. So, Blanca, anything you want to mention about that?
Well, let's see. MetaOne Coin, that's very, very exciting stuff. And it's really nice that Robert is going to the workshops, because I imagine you give him a good chance to do Q&A for people to ask him questions about the coins.
Yes. And he hangs around as long as necessary in the afternoon for people who have questions.
Very good. That's good. Well, it's good to learn about cryptos in general, in my opinion. A lot of people, there's a lot of controversy about the cryptos. A lot of people, when they first started getting in, it was a get rich quick thing, and now it looks like it's get poor quick thing.
It did for some.
Right, exactly. But I think the concept of crypto coins and how it works and the mechanics and contrasting it to the current system, I think it's important for all of us to know whether we're ready to jump on board or not, because all the indications are that this current corrupt system is going to go away. And, you know, before the call, I had mentioned to you that I'd seen other people talk about a quantum financial system. And, you know, I don't pay attention to a lot of the other stuff going on, but I said, you know, I've been seeing this quantum financial system mentioned. And so that's why I asked you about it, to see what you thought about it. Is it something that might be for real? How should we think about this?
Well, and thank you for bringing that up, because you're right. I hadn't talked about it, because now I'm telling you what is my opinion. In my opinion, it's going to take a while for it to fully be implemented. The quantum financial system is the new financial system that will basically come in and replace the current existing central banking system, is what it will do. And what's really positive about the quantum financial system, again, is it's going to be based on blockchain technology. And it's going to allow much quicker, faster movement of financial transactions when money is digitized, is what it does. But my understanding is, see, it's still a threat to the existing central banking system. You know, there was one thing that I learned when I was in the legislature and when I was a state senator. You know, people would bring me bills to introduce and says, we want you to take this bill, sign it, and run, bring this into law. And it took me a little bit, but it took me about 3 or 4 years, and I finally got it down. I realized there was only 3 questions that I had to ask. And once I had the answer to those 3 questions, I already knew about 70 to 80% of everything I needed to know about probably what I would be doing and how I'd be voting on that bill. And the first question I always asked was, who's behind it? Who is supporting it? Who are the people that are pushing this? Who are the people that want this, and why? They always want it because it has some benefit to them. Number two, who's in opposition to it? How strong is that opposition? Are they big players? Are they the players, i.e. the players with the guns that could control things? And why they are in opposition to it? Because does it bring a threat to them? And then number three, the question was, how much would it cost? Because if there's a cost involved, it has to be placed into what is called the current money stream and flow. And once I had those answers to those questions, everything just fell into place. Well, when you talk about either the cryptocurrency system, or if you talk about even the quantum financial system, the cryptocurrency system, it's the benefit of the everyday people like you and me, and that's why it's not going to go away, because it's supported by the masses. The banking industry has put up an opposition to it, but they can't stop it because basically they're not involved in the middle of it. They're no longer in the transaction, so they can't control it. There was some interesting stuff that I saw even today. It looks like the Federal Reserve is going to come out with its own cryptocurrency coin in 2020. There was an article I saw today, so we'll see. Now, the quantum financial system has to be brought into the current banking structure, and it has to replace what is there. And is there opposition to it? Absolutely. Because the central banking system doesn't necessarily want this quantum financial system, because it takes away their power and control. And so it's not going to be that easy to bring it in. What it really means is, for it to be implemented, it has to be done by somebody who's very powerful. Now, that could possibly happen here in the United States through an act of Congress, because Congress has authority over the Federal Reserve System. They could possibly, once Congress begins to wake up, they could have in a bill that they are going to replace the Federal Reserve System, which is a private business, with the quantum financial system. They could do that. And the positive thing about that is, because it's all based on blockchain technology, it takes away all the corruption. It was interesting because Robert, when he was on the radio program, Robert Dunlap, and we had this discussion, there is so much corruption that goes on at the very, very top of our current financial system. Here's an illustration. You go to Wall Street, and you can have a very solid, strong company such as Amazon or who knows what, And on Wall Street, they can take that one share of stock and they can sell it 5 to 10 times. Now, how do they get by with that? Well, what they do is they look at how many shares of stock are held by what are called financial retirement accounts, 401k accounts, by how are they held by basically the hedge funds that put money into these retirement accounts. Those people don't buy and sell. They buy and hold. And so, they, you know, that share of stock can sit there for 10 to 20 years. Well, that means they can go out and sell it over and over and over again and make money off of it, and nobody knows about it. And that's the deep corruption that is there. Not only does it happen on Wall Street, it also happens in the banking industry. You know, the banks are supposed to basically, you know, you have to have 10% of the money in reserve, and then 90% they can loan out. Well, they'll take that same money and they'll loan it out 3, 4, 5 times. And the public doesn't know that. So they're making all kinds of illegal, corrupt money by manipulating the system in a quiet, private system. When you move into a system that is using blockchain technology and all those transactions are out in the open, they can't get by with that. The quantum financial system based on blockchain technology will clean up the financial system. But one of the reasons why I believe it's going to take a while is because there's huge oppositions, and these are the people who can buy the guns from the current banking system. And I'm using that as a metaphor when I say that. So that's my perspective in it. It would take an act of Congress and a new law to bring it in quickly. If not, there's going to be all kinds of opposition to it. So that's how I see the quantum financial system.
So would you see that something would have to change in terms of the Federal Reserve?
I think so. I do think so. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, either that means they have to totally change or it has to go away, one of the two.
Right.
They have to basically become in favor of it, you know. And I don't see that happening in the current structure because there's still too many of them that are still, you know, what I call enslaved to the old paradigm. They don't see the new, they're not supporters of a new paradigm of change.
Right. So it is a big deal because the control of the financial system, yeah, there's the controllers who are the very top, but it impacts a lot of people who currently are benefiting from that power system.
Yeah. Now, it is possible we could have a complete global financial collapse because crisis creates opportunity. That was one of the things I really learned when I was in politics. You know, if you want to change a system, it's really difficult to change the system when you have people embedded into the system. I.e. the, you know, the central banking system, how they're embedded into our current financial structure, create a dramatic crisis, and all of a sudden it creates the momentum from the masses to create change. And then, you know, it's very hard for them to defend it because then it becomes out into the public, you see. So there is a possibility if a huge crisis develops that it can bring it in quicker and sooner. But until that happens, if it's just, you know, going with the status quo, the way that things are, I think I see it taking time before it comes in.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got an interesting few months ahead of us, so.
Okay.
We'll keep our eyes open about that.
Normally, I make these announcements earlier in the program, but also I just wanted to give a quick small update on what's happening on the currency exchanges. I did get an update about a week and a half ago from one of my primary funding sources, and they said something this time that was much, much different. They act as what are called broker bankers. They are not necessarily the processing people. They did say for the very first time that the processing offices do have dates, but they are not releasing those dates out into the public, and nobody knows it. But one of the things of what most of us had surmised was one of the dates that we were waiting for was yesterday, the election getting over, because that now shifts and changes everything because the dynamics of what is called public opinion is going to settle for a period of time. And we're in a situation now where, it, you know, if stuff that goes on publicly, they don't have to worry about how's it going to affect the election. So, but that's what we're hearing is that they do have dates. There are some rumors that are going on around there about what had happened on some of these currencies. Folks, just to let you know, those who have already turned in currencies with me, all your money is safe. All your currencies are safe, okay? That's all I can say. I cannot go into any more details, but I can say I know where it is, and it's all safe. But it's just that we don't get to be paid for it until it's time for this bigger picture for everything to be released. So, Blanca, with that, is there anything else that you would want to talk about before I go into the program tonight?
No, but it was nice to get an update on the currency exchange. Although we don't not privy to those dates, the fact that there are dates, again, seems to be a data point that suggests that this is actually going to happen. And then we'll just have to practice our telepathy to try to hone in on the dates.
Yeah, that would be, we can do that and work on that, can't we? So just making sure that, you know, either to have it happen sooner or whatever dates that they're projecting that it happens then, so it doesn't get delayed.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, tonight I actually wanted to talk about the elections that happened yesterday and what took place and the impact that it has on us and what is it going to mean for all of us, for everything that we do here and what we're waiting for. It was interesting because I had a text message from a friend earlier today, and he asked the question, he says, well, the Republicans losing the majority, is that going to have any impact upon, you know, what we do and how this process works for us? And I basically said and I'm telling you what is my opinion that comes from 25 years of being around this stuff. And I told him, no, in fact, it might end up being a blessing in disguise. For our funds to be released, there has to be, this is an international event that's taking place. And to do that, there has to be almost like one of those crisis moments that allows this to bring this kind of money in without it going chaotic and going crazy. Now, when we talk about the election, I have never, in my 25 to 30 years I've been around this stuff, I've never seen a midterm election like we just had as far as the buildup to it. I mean, there were people that were understanding how important that this election was. And they were kind of split on both sides of being either pro-Trump or against Trump. And the energy around that was extremely dynamic, what is there. I've never seen so much, you know, agitation, irritation, anxiety, protesting about what was building up to it. And I've never seen on the side of support so much support that was coming from, you know, basically your very strong Trump supporters, Republican people, and both sides were saying, get out the vote, get out there and vote, and get out there and vote. And the turnout is extremely high for a midterm election. Now, what happened is not abnormal. It's very, very, very common when a president is in their first term and after 2 years in the midterm election, whatever party the president is a part of, that party loses seats in the House. That's very common, and we saw that. But here was what was a little different. It's not common to lose that many seats and have a shift of control, and then yet that party that loses seats in the House picks up some very powerful seats in the Senate. Because right now the Senate, they're at a gain of 3, possibly 4, is what is potentially happening. And some of those there might go into a recount, and they're still waiting for some more ballots to be counted in two states that are very, very close, here in my home state in Arizona and in Florida. Montana was extremely close, and it did flip last night, and the incumbent Democrat, they're saying, is going to hold his seat. Because Montana, because it's such a small state and has a much smaller amount of people, their counting systems are a little bit different than some of the bigger states. It looks like Florida's probably going to have to go into a recount. And so we may not know. But right now, the Republican is leaning. And with the amount of lead that the Republican has, I don't see that shifting and changing. So now we've got a divided Congress. What does that really mean? Well, and I'm not going to talk about, you know, the politics side of it as, you know, most of your mainstream news stations. I want to talk about the impact it has on what is called cleaning up the swamp and the bigger picture of the currency exchanges. Why is the Democrats in the House a blessing in disguise? Well, when you have Congress controlled, both the House and the Senate, by one party, that party becomes the dominant party, and there's usually an adversarial reaction to that, because there's a percentage of the people that don't like one party controlling the House, the Senate, and the presidency. They just don't. And so they're always going to vote in opposition to that. if Trump is going to start moving forward on cleaning up the swamp, if he's going to start moving forward on basically the sealed indictments that are out there, when the sealed indictments issue, the mainstream media hasn't been talking about that at all. And it's stunning because the update was, again, the first of the month, that there are now over 61,000 of those sealed indictments. If he starts moving forward on that, it creates a lot of consternation because it looks like a political attack coming from one side. With the Democrats in the majority in the House, it's almost certain that they're going to start coming after Trump. Remember, in politics, it's all about image and perspective. We always have this old saying in politics, perception is reality regardless of the facts. So the Democrats want to project a perception of the Republicans being bad. You can't count on him. Trump is an evil, bad president. They're going to try projecting him now as being a crook. The Democrats are probably going to start a hearing process around the president, around President Trump, and they're basically going to start using subpoena power and bring the people out into the public to have public testimony of everything that Mueller's been doing. There's a very high probability that's going to take place. And they want to do all of this to bring it all out in the open because they want to smear the president, because by making him look bad, the Democrats, you know, in 2 years has a better shot at the presidential election process. That's the way the game's played, folks. Well, if the Democrats start attacking him, then you will find that there's public support about him defending himself and taking countermeasures. Now, let's talk about all these sealed indictments. This is still phenomenal to me. I've never seen anything like it. There is a government website, PACER, PACER.gov. Now, you can go into that site, but it's a government website, and it lists all of the district courts around the country and by states, and you have to go into it deeper, but it will bring out all of the sealed indictments that are in all the federal district courts all around the country. And there are people that go out and they bring them out and they add them all up and they put them out on a spreadsheet. And right now we're at 61,000. And it's been going up about 5,000 to 7,000 a month, every month since it started over a year ago. That's phenomenal because, folks, on average, there's only about 1,000 sealed indictments per year. And right now we've got 61,000 that have accumulated in the last year and a half. And this is not something that's a political issue, because the process to get a sealed indictment is basically a government prosecutor, whether it's a federal prosecutor, a state or a county prosecutor, they says, we believe this person has committed a crime. And so what they do, they bring in a grand jury. Now, grand juries can range anywhere from 10 to 20 citizens. It's like you're in jury duty. But instead of hearing a trial, you're being a part of what is called a grand jury process. The prosecutor then presents the evidence to the grand jury. And everyday common citizens then of this grand jury make the decision to say, yes, we believe there is enough evidence here that this person has committed a crime. This person needs to go to court and trial. So a grand jury process is very quiet. And to see what happens then, when they do that, they use that because the prosecutor says, now we want to, so you as a grand jury are bringing forward an indictment. It's not the individual prosecutor. It's not a political process. It's not an individual. This grand jury of citizens is bringing the indictment against the person. And then that indictment is sealed. It's called a sealed indictment. And the reason is because the prosecutor says this is an ongoing investigation and we do not want this indictment out in the public. Because, see, most indictments, they're all part of the public process. The court systems are part of the public process unless it's an issue of a matter of national security. To have 61,000 sealed indictments means there's been a whole lot of grand juries that are out there to prosecute all these people. Because it's been picking up, as I said, about 5,000 to 7,000 a month. And the word is It's basically being headed up by an individual in the Department of Justice who's heading up this process. And part of it is coming out of the Mueller investigations, and part of it is coming out of all the other stuff about being designed to run what is called to clean up the swamp. Now, today, Ben Fulford came out with a updated newsletter. And he had been saying for about a month to 2 months or so that it was very likely the sealed indictment process was going to wait until after the elections were over. And we saw something that happened today. Trump got rid of the attorney general. He basically told the attorney general he wanted his resignation letter. Attorney General Sessions is gone. He's no longer the attorney general. That's a huge step, because now Trump is bringing in a person to head up the Department of Justice that is loyal to him. He gets to see, it's taken him 2 years to really be there and understand who's loyal, who's behind him in cleaning up the swamp, who's behind him in wanting to go after all these folks, who's behind him in wanting to support the sealed indictment process. He needed to know who's going to be loyal versus who's going to be reluctant or in opposition, because it's very easy to have people on your staff that's in opposition to something like that. And it appears that he just didn't have the confidence in Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, to move forward with this process. That was huge, the fact that he did it the day after the election. Ben Fulford had not written his newsletter at that time, but he said it's time to start moving forward with the sealed indictment process. He basically saying, he said the Gitmo planes are beginning to fire up. Gitmo, Guantanamo Bay, that's where they're going to take a lot of these people, and that they're going to go through a military tribunal process in the court system versus a public court system process. And because then they can move through it, it's still, you know, a fair jury situation, but the jurors are military people. The judge is a military judge. And they get to do this with anybody that could come, that their crimes would be considered what is called a threat to the process. Okay, my phone's ringing. Hold on here just a minute. Hold on here just a second. Okay, that's a near normally. Okay, so that's the process that's going on there. And Ben Fulford is basically, because his sources come from inside the Department of Justice and inside the Pentagon, and he's basically saying they're ready to start that process. Now, what does that have to do with us? When you look at the bigger picture, when they start the sealed indictment process, it's a huge media event. Basically, that's where Trump gets to step up and says, where were you? This has been public information on a public website for close to 2 years, and you guys haven't had a peep about it. That's why you're fake news. You didn't want to start telling the truth. You didn't want to give the public. See, he, to me personally, when all these sealed indictments start coming out, he's going to have a grand stage to point the media and say, you guys are fake news. You didn't want to talk about this. This is huge news. That's going to create a lot of what I call consternation, a lot of reaction from a lot of people. It's going to create a crisis situation. That could be something that is so uncertain, it could possibly create an economic collapse that I've talked about the last couple times around. So all of those things are what's developing, and all of that sets the stage for the potential of the money coming forward. So that's why I basically have been building up to this and talking about this, and why I wanted to basically give some significance on what was taking place here. Because we still have to come back to one of the things that has been very positive about Trump is he's been basically keeping his campaign promises. He's been doing them. Well, there's one he hasn't taken any action on. And how, you and I remember how many times in the political campaign he basically was calling that, you know, Hillary Clinton was a criminal. And you and I know that almost anybody else that did what she did in a normal situation, they would have been prosecuted, and they basically would have been, you know, in jail or in prison for them. So all of this is what has that potential to basically set the scenario for some dramatic change. And the fact that the Democrats are basically now in the majority in the House, and you got Nancy Pelosi may end up being the Speaker of the House. All of that sets the stage for the potential change. What we might see is that they're going to wait for the Democrats to start attacking before they start the counter movement. And so we'll see what begins to happen on that. And that still may take a couple months, because remember, the election was yesterday. But those people that were elected yesterday don't get sworn into office until the first week of January. So the Democrats will not have the control of the House for about another 2 months. So we may not see much happening for the next couple of months if they're going to move on this stuff. We don't know. I don't know. There's various pros and cons around the strategies behind that. But that's the possibility there, what we see developing, what we see taking place there. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about, the results of the elections from last night, how I think it's the fact that, you know, the Democrats, to me, have the majority. It might be a blessing in disguise because, see, at the end of the day, the only thing Congress can do is pass a law. Everything else is just talk and rhetoric. It's all that it is, talk and rhetoric. That's the only thing they can do legally. And so now that you have a split Congress, you know, between the Democrats and the Republicans of who's in control, what you're going to find is nothing controversial is going to get done. But the Democrats have a stage to attack, and that gives the Republicans and the president a stage to defend in the public arena. So I think that covers most of it there, Blanca. Is there anything you would like to share and add to that?
Well, I'm with you. It's been quite a show they put on leading up to these midterm elections. And I don't know about you, but did you notice that each side, I mean, if they're really, really, you know, identified with the politics, I'm sure many of the people who listen to you have a little bit of a separation about that. But, I mean, people really were afraid like the world would end if, you know, the Republic, really, if the Republicans stayed in power and vice versa. Like, Hey, if the Democrats, I mean, it's really a very polarized situation. That's the thing that I really noticed. And I thought, boy, if anyone wants proof that there are multiple realities out there, they just got to listen to each camp. Very interesting. Did you see that?
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I mean, you know, politics was my life when I was in it for 12 years. So I lived this drama world day in and day out, and how, you know, you debate back and forth. I remember this one guy saying, you know, politics is like a war, except you're not shooting bullets at each other. You're shooting words and ideas, but you're at war with each other, which you are, with about who's in control, you know, between the two parties. And, you know, some people are civil and some are not, you know, in the political process. But what we have seen in the last 6 months to a year is the drama that the people have picked up. And here's what it took me a while, but here's where I am today. I really don't care what goes on in the political arena, because I basically, you know, at the end of the day, both the Republicans and the Democrats are the same. It's all about power and control, what it takes to get the power and control. And secondly, they're not the ones in power and control. There's only a handful of people that really run the system, and I've shared this before. There are five of the 535 members of Congress that are the gatekeepers, which means everything has to come through them. And whatever comes through one of those five, if they don't like it, it doesn't go anywhere. So you can be a member of Congress and bring up a bill and have all kinds of support and get the bill passed out of the House, but if the majority leader doesn't like it, it doesn't go anywhere. So if you can control those five and the president, you can control the United States of America. And it's money that does that, folks. It's the power of what we call the cabal elite money controls those five people. And they do it. And they will always do it. And they will always have that, keep that sense of power and control. And if you don't cooperate and play ball with them, well, they always remind us, look at what happened to President Kennedy. And that's exactly what would happen. They would get rid of them. They will either threaten to kill you or they will threaten to kill your family members. And that was the rumors of what it was for Obama. They didn't necessarily threaten to kill him. They threatened to kill his children if he didn't play ball. But it's the vast majority of the stuff these rulers don't care about. They only care about the real things that have impact and that would take away their power and control. And so they make sure that any controversial bills don't get passed. Anything that upsets their controlling of the world's money supply, anything that upsets their controlling of the political system of international politics, if it upsets what they want, they'll step in. And they'll make sure it goes their way. And if not, those one of those five people that if they're one of the gatekeepers, they're done and they're gone. That's what happens. I don't think it was a coincidence of why Paul Ryan didn't want to stay as Speaker of the House very long. He knew that. He knew he really was not the person who was really in power control. He's a puppet. All six of those, they're puppets to these elite. And so at the end of the day, it says it's always about the power and control in the system. And so here's what I've learned to do. If I am in a position where I'm allowing myself to get caught up into the drama of politics, I'm allowing something that I have absolutely no power and control over, and that a lot of those people have no power and control over, to control me. So who's really at stake? What I'm doing is I'm losing my place of peace. I'm involved in the mind dramas. I'm involved in arguing. I'm involved in debating. I mean, whether I'm quietly debating by myself or whether I'm out publicly protesting or whatever, I've lost my place of peace. And these elite note controllers know if they can keep us arguing, fighting, being in fear, they're in control. Because that's what's called duality and separation consciousness. You use arguing, fighting, warring, debating, and fear to control the people. And that's exactly what they want. So if we step in and start arguing and fighting and debating within ourselves or with others about what's going on in politics, we're feeding the system. We're feeding it and doing exactly what they want. Our job is to learn how to go in, release the drama, let go of the drama, rise above it and just be an observer of it. You can talk about it. See, I'm here talking about politics tonight. Here's what's different. I can have an opinion. I can discuss the issues. The question is it creating an energetic reaction within me that is destroying my place of peace? That's my barometer. That's what I watch for. If I'm stepping into something on a political basis and it's starting to take my peace away and I'm getting a little bit irritated or agitated or I'm becoming dominant about my opinion, that's when I've basically, I need to step back. Because then I'm feeding them. I'm feeding that energy into them. And that's exactly what they want. We are the powerful ones from the place of peace. Peace is the power position to be in. It's not the weak position. Because when you're at peace, they can't control you. They can't dominate you. They can't keep you in the drama in your mind in a position of separation consciousness. Non-duality consciousness is being in a place of non-dualism, non-separation. When you're in that place of peace, you're the one who's in power and control. And you're the one who gets to decide how it is you're going to react. And you get to be the observer versus the participant. So, with that, what other comments would you like to share with us, Blanca?
Well, I don't think it's a coincidence that as more people are waking up and more people are deprogramming themselves, more people know about fake news now than they did 2 years ago. It's not a coincidence that I think that they're amping up the divisiveness, that they're amping up, you know, paying people to demonstrate and paying people to fight in the streets and all that drama. I don't think it's a coincidence. They're trying to stir it up. Like you said, they're trying to pull us off our center or pull us from our internal peace.
Yeah. See, in the lack, war creates fear and war creates drama. Well, we're not in a strong warring position right now. So then they create the fear and the drama or the anxiety through politics, creating events that create the drama. You know, the bottom line is, you know, the caravan that's coming, you know, from, through Central America, somebody's paying for all that. somebody's paying for those people to spend 2 to 3 months. I mean, it's costing millions upon millions of dollars to support those people, to feed them, to clothe them, to let them have showers, to let them have, you know, portable toilets, the trucks that they're riding in. Who's paying to move those 5,000 to 7,000 people day by day on a basis? It's millions of dollars designed to create the drama, is what it is. It's a drama-creating situation. So, yeah.
Well, it's just an interesting situation. It gives us, like, a master's opportunity training. So if you can observe these with interest, kind of like you said, because it is interesting to see the dynamics of what's going out there. But if you could witness it and not lose yourself in it, not forget who you really are, then that's a very interesting proposition. You are not contributing the energy to the illusion.
Yeah. Yep. I had somebody try to call me and send me a text, and I just needed to say, hey, did you forget I'm on the radio right now? So, no, I can't answer your call or text you back or call you back because I'm on the radio right now. So, yeah. Well, you know, it's
busy.
Interesting because,
busy.
You know, it was a couple of weeks ago I started talking about this LEARN process from A.R. Borden and about how as we step into becoming an understanding and moving past the limitations of the physical body, and understanding that we're basically holonomic quantum-based people, we have the ability through our sense of consciousness and the power of our thoughts to be able to create something out of nothing. And they could do it. These were the scientists that understood the physics about how Jesus was able to do the miracles that he did. Well, I'm starting to read his materials now. It's quite extensive. I thought it was going to be, you know, he had talked about it and Neruda in his interviews had talked about anybody can do this. And I thought, okay, I'll start doing my work. And then when I really started getting into it, I realized, well, it's not very simple. It's going to take a very deliberate process to totally reprogram yourself to be able to bring this stuff forward. But there was the one thing that he was very adamant about that was the most important. He said, if you want to be able to learn how to create stuff, the ultimate of manifestation, and create stuff out of nothing, and we know how to do this, we know the physics behind it. If you want to do that, you have to be at peace. He says the bio-mind, the combination of the mind and the body, creates this energy field. Now, we call it an aura. They call it what's called the Meissnick energy field. And he says, when you're at a place of irritation, agitation, arguing, fighting, debating, judging, you're not at peace. Your body, your bio-mind is not peaceful. It's not producing peaceful energy. You have to absolutely learn how to stay in the position of peace and to rise above all the drama that comes around you. When you're in the position of peace, you then can focus on creating what is called the template, the thought in your mind. And then it's the energy that comes out of our mind, are these memes that comes out of our mind that connects with the energy that's coming out in what's called the Meissnick energy field. Those two combine, they join together, and then they go out and they basically attach themselves to light packets that are happening around you. And that's what's called, that's why it's, and it basically is what makes stuff physically appear. When you understand the world is just a holographic illusion and nothing is really truly physical, it's only a process of perception, you can then understand how that can work. And so it's in the LEARN, light encoded. You're encoding light packets, reality matrix, LEARN, light encoded reality matrix. If you want to learn that, if you want to take on that work, here's what I recommend you, where you start. And this is very, very helpful. There is a Facebook page called The Writings of A.R. Borden, B-O-R-D-E-N. The Writings of A.R. Borden. On the left side of the page, there's what's called a Files tab. You click on that Files tab and you're going to find 42 of his books, essays, and white papers. My recommendation is to start with three novels. The first one is called the Ancient Arrow Project that comes out of the Wingmakers material. It's with thewingmakers.com. It is a book you can buy on Amazon, or you can download the PDF format, and that will cost you $7. It's the Ancient Arrow Project. That is the foundation of all the Wingmakers in Borden's and Neruda's materials. And why do I talk about that? Folks, I haven't seen anything like it. I haven't seen anything. You tell me any group of scientists out there that are just so proficient and so understanding of the physics of the universe that they can make stuff just appear. What does it mean? They don't need money. They don't need physical items. They don't need food. They basically have trained their bodies to rise above the limitations that the physical body is programmed within us. And they can make anything appear out of anything. One of those books on that Facebook page is, it's about a 180-page PDF book, and it's called Something from Nothing. He has another about 190-page PDF book called Become Like God, i.e., he's talking about Jesus. He uses him as the illustration. He says everything that he did, whether it was walking on the water, turning the water into wine, feeding the 5,000, healing the people, all these things he was able to do that we call miracles, he understood basically it was a consciousness process, and he had to keep himself in that absolute place of peace and love. He was always there. He had reprogrammed himself to rise above the drama of this false, holographic, fake world. He knew what was real. What was real is the essence of his soul. And staying with that and understanding the power of love, the power of forgiveness, the power of understanding. And that's the energy he portrayed and moved out from himself. And that gave him the ability to do everything that he did. Borden's group as scientists understood the physics behind that. They know how it works in physics. And they said, we do it, and we can do it, and you can learn to do it too. That's why I talk about the references that I give you. The Course in Miracles is the absolute best. They talk about the forgiveness process. The forgiveness process is what does, undoes, and heals all the old stuff in you and gives you that, brings you to the place of peace where you rise above all the drama that's going on around you. The forgiveness process. I saw this quote the other day. It says, it's not a coincidence that the word forgiveness appears 982 times in the Course in Miracles.
All of a sudden, I can't hear Dave. I'm not sure if the rest of you can hear him. Looks like I'm still on Blog Talk, so it's not that I've been kicked out. So I'm not sure if Dave has been kicked off of Blog Talk. People on Facebook might still be able to hear him. And Alan, if you are listening, perhaps you can text and let me know if you can still hear Dave. Well, folks, I'm not real sure if Dave has popped off of Blog Talk. I'm going to try to text him, and then maybe he can update me that way. Okay, so it looks like you can still hear me on Blog Talk. So let me, if you don't mind, give me a second. Okay, so we'll see if we can get Dave back on. I'm getting messages that it looks like you can still hear me on Blog Talk, but not Dave. But maybe the folks on Facebook can still hear him. So in the meantime, hope you all survived election day, and we'll see what this brings. personally, I find it very interesting that one of the major actions involving Attorney General Sessions came right after the election. So perhaps we're going to see some very interesting moves on the chessboard post-elections. So we'll keep an awareness about that all the time, remembering that it's a play, folks. It's a play. Well, I am not being from Dave, so I've got a suspicion that he may just be carrying on Facebook. We'll hang on for a second and see if he comes back. I wonder if he's on Facebook or if he's lost connection to Facebook as well. That'd be something. You know, he really hadn't had trouble on his shows. If he wasn't talking about the currency exchange, he didn't seem to have any interruptions. So it's kind of interesting that he's having an interruption on this show. I guess we're just going to see if he comes in. I've texted him, and I haven't heard back from him at all. So I am not sure what is going on with Mr. Dave. And by now, I'm sure he's gotten some texts from other folks. I'm texting him again to see what he has to say. He's abandoned us, folks. He's abandoned us. Normally, when he gets bumped off like that, he aims to get right back on. But I'm not getting any sort of communication from him, so that's kind of interesting.